You're very welcome to this very special episode of The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady, and today is our 50th episode. We want to take this moment at the start of the show to thank everyone who's listened to us over the past year. Without you, none of it would be possible. We get a lot of audience feedback. It's great. And here's to another 50 or more of the same. Yeah.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Anthony Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ringrose comes through. Oh, that is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
Good work, Andy. 50 not out.
No, I'm 49. I'm off the show.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That's disappointing. So you can't actually say that then.
We're very good at the stats here. Cap 49. So on this joyous occasion, I have James Downey beside me.
Andy.
And Pat McCarry.
Hey, how's it going?
And a little later, we'll be joined on the line by former Munster and current Racing 92 second row, Dunnick Ryan. But first, the Italian job. Done and dusted. This is what Ireland needed. Overtake the England points total, or rather, winning margin.
Yeah, exactly what they were looking for. They look good. I loved the way they kind of tore into them at the start, and I think it was like 14-0 after 12 minutes or something like that, and they just didn't stop, and they were hungry. I think they were aware that you need to build up the points against Italy, especially this Italy side aren't great, so they knew that England had done a job last week and they had to go and match them or improve on it. So that's why it was, you know, interesting to see them going to the end, and Keith Earls, you know, ran his ass off to get Bellini at the end there. So all very important, and just the only shame was those injuries they picked up. We'll probably lose Henshaw now for the Wales game, but hopefully everybody else pulls through in the next week or so.
Yeah, that's key for me. I think it's job done, isn't it? Like, you know, as you say, it came out with the right intent, moved the ball extremely well to start, and beforehand it was kind of gone against what Joe Schmidt had said beforehand, that it's going to take the 60-minute mark to break them down. But I guess the Italians are quite poor themselves anyway. I didn't think they were any good compared to what they were against Italy. I think Connor would be very disappointed, but an Irish perspective, job done, as I say, but it's so disappointing with the injuries. I'm glad Tadhg Furlongs isn't as bad as it seems. Depends on the analysis, I'm sure, today or yesterday they would have done it. The type of grade, hopefully it's not too bad. Hopefully it's only grade one or two. But yeah, I think it was a testament to the speed of the opening 10-15 minutes. You know, I think the ball's in play an awful lot, and for a prop to sprint nice and early, it wasn't the best, but very disappointing, the injuries. I think that's could hurt us.
So the injuries was the Robbie Henshaw one was the one which looks like it's going to be particularly have a long term impact, but that's two Lions gone, which is not great. Fingers crossed with Furlong, of course. But that did give opportunities for other people to come in, which is good. We'll come back to that. The Ireland, how they started the game was interesting. So yes, they tore into them, but there were some little slippages, some slip-ups in that first 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, and then suddenly they slip into gear. And the way that Conan and Conor Murray dovetailed for that try, I sitting there watching, I was going, "Oh yeah, this is good. This is good. This is communicating. This is heads-up rugby." Very, very simple stuff. But when you're operating in a tight channel like that, and you make that work, and no one got a finger on them. That was a good sign to start the day.
Yeah, it was some great intricate play, wasn't it? Really very impressive. But I'm sure that's a lot of the stuff that you'll see in the training park that they'll bring anyway. But sometimes you're a little bit shackled at international rugby when you don't have that space and you don't have that time. But to be able to do it under that pressure, that shows exactly why they are where they are. But some of that was really positive. I think there's a couple of balls that went down as well that Joe certainly will not be happy with. he's very one for been so analytical and critical that the video session won't be very nice today. He'll draw a line under it, as I say, but he'll make sure that against better teams you won't get away with this. You can't make these errors against the Welsh, you can't make these errors against the Italians. Yes, you will get away with it, but you saw again, you saw how when the Italians turn over the ball, they're actually quite dangerous and they've got a bit of speed. And we kind of fell asleep a little bit in the second half. I think it was a lot of changes came on, a lot of disruption to the side, which happens with subs, and you know, and slows the game down a little bit, but he's not going to be happy with some of those tries, you know, some of the way simple errors like one-on-one stuff, out of line, and especially coming on the back of the French game, where it's a little bit of out of system work, and I'm sure Andy Farrell will not be happy, and that'll be a huge area of focus is the defence.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. The first thing is Bundyaki had to do a good amount of work today, especially with Henshaw going off, and Pat, you were speaking to him after the game.
You could hear the impact of that when you got that try just from up where we were sitting in the stands. It was some collision. Do you feel anything like that at the time, or do you kind of just shake it off because you've got the score as well?
I in the beginning when I was just happy I got over the line, you know, and just to be able to help out the boys and get the score on the board or something was a bonus, and to get the first try for this team is something special. And you know, the crowd's always been unbelievable, the crowd's always been loud, and you know, they've always been behind us, and I think that's the greatest thing about playing in an Irish jersey, is that the supporters here are very, very passionate about their team, and I think that's one thing that we take, you know, they're the 16th man in the field, so yeah.
And what did it mean to you, like, giving your first try for Ireland as well? Did you have a word with yourself, you know, going back to the restart when Johnny was lining up the conversion?
Oh no, I think you just got to park that and just, you know, make sure you do the next job, which is receiving that kickoff, and make sure you're doing the right thing the next one. So no point in trying to celebrate the try, you know, and do something wrong the next time. So I think you just got to make sure you park in and move on and do things right next time.
And you mentioned Earls there as well, like, he could be a midfield partner for yourself as well. Did you enjoy the kind of little time you had with him, and maybe during the week up in Buccaneers during the week and have a run out with him as well?
I think Earls is like a world class player, you know, the experience that he has, you know, I think I felt real comfortable just the way he was playing. I think that was the same thing that Robbie did to me, made me feel comfortable with him on the outside, Johnny on the outside, and it's the same thing with Earls. The amount of cups that he's had, the amount of games he's played on international level, you know, you can only just feed off their energy and feed off their experience. So yeah.
Somebody's talking about having Earls come in, which is a nice option to have, coming in beside him, and we are assuming that Robbie's going to be out for a good while here. So who will come in? Ringrose, is he in the picture? Earls, Scannell and moving Bundy out, Chris Farrell. There are a few options here on the table.
Yeah, it was interesting to even hear Earls kind of discuss as an option there, because we kind of really hadn't thought about it, but I think I'd prefer to keep Earls out on the right wing where he's flying. So, and then Ringrose was brought up in the post-match press conference, but Schmidt was almost kind of saying, listen, he's got the quality to come in, but he thinks it might be a game too soon for him. So it'd be interesting to see if Ringrose gets a game against Scarlets at the weekend, but it'd be a lot to throw him in against the Welsh. So for me, I'm thinking Farrell, but I don't know, Jim, you're an expert in this field.
Yeah, I'd be thinking Farrell as well, especially if you're thinking the Welsh midfield, if you're dealing with Hadley Parks and Scott Williams. Again, very abrasive lads, so very physical in how they play. I think Chris would match up nicely. I think Bundy's coming to his own, in fairness to him now. It's great to see him making a few outside breaks, which is always good to see, rather than just his bludgeoning work that he normally does and brings anyway. But interestingly enough as well, I think every time in the warm-ups they have their extended squad out there, and they have Rory Scannell there, and he's training against them the whole time, so don't know whether that's obviously another option, and Rory in himself in his own right is extremely physical, so I would have no fears about that. But I just think against the Welsh they might want to tighten things up a little bit, and go with Chris. I think Chris and Bundy, but I think Scannell is certainly an option, and they have time now. So again, this weekend's going to be interesting to see who's going to play.
Yeah, who gets released?
Yeah,
back. Whichever happens, if you're wearing Gatland, you're actually smiling, because you will have an inexperienced combination whoever gets picked. You know, even if they did drop Earls in, which I agree, Pat, I think that would be a mistake.
Yeah.
To get some more experience there, it's still not an experienced combination.
No, you can't put Earls in the centre.
It's
a kick in the nether regions for someone going. It's not. He hasn't played centre all year. We're looking at him predominantly as a winger, so why would we bring him into midfield and I'm the midfield? You know, it's not going to work. I think it was a great stopgap at the weekend, perfect because you have him. But no, it's too tough a position as well to play a 13-year. So it's the hardest place to defend. Fair play to Earls, he knew what he was doing there as well. You're lucky to have that extra option out there. But no, I think Farrell's playing quite well as well. I think, why not give him a go?
Okay. Joe Schmidt was talking after the game. Pat, you were speaking to him along with the other post-match journos, and then he didn't continue the conversation with the dailies. That's something which was raised over the weekend by a few different outlets. What, from your perspective, what was going on there?
They're saying this is the first time in 52 games that he hasn't done his separate Monday press briefing, and interesting to see that a few of the Welsh journalists were saying, like, Warren Gatland has actually introduced them. It's normally an extra chance for the coach, because the live stuff is you're looking for the immediate reaction from the game, but a lot of the Monday briefings is guys are looking forward to the game ahead or the week ahead, and so it's a chance to kind of, you know, set the tone for the week, and it's a chance again for the coach if he wants to get any messages out there to do it. So it's just been something that's been, you know, long running tradition, I suppose, and it's not really just even for the daily. Sometimes online can go in as long as you don't put it out until the Monday morning. But Schmidt has there's been a, like, I'm not saying Schmidt now, he's surely involved in the decision, but the IRFU have just been cutting back a bit of media access and player access and coach access over the last since Schmidt came in, really. So it's
there are a few things going on at the moment,
yeah,
stories in the media that may be feeding into this, but I think we'll keep an eye on this one and see where it goes.
Yeah, like, so it's interesting to see, but that's where it is. And you know, there's no word of whether it'll happen after the Wales game or the Scotland game as well, but yeah, it's a shame to kind of lose it, but because everybody wants to hear from the people who are involved rather than these kind of, you know, 60-second YouTube snippets and stuff. So
yeah, well, speaking of 60-second YouTube snippets, Eddie Jones was not afraid of sharing his thoughts. He was speaking to BBC. I think we have that.
Ford and Farrell, both as ever on the money in that front.
Outstanding, and I thought our back three today was super. Mike Brown, you know, you guys all tell me
he was good today, wasn't he?
Well, you guys tell me he can't play Test rugby, and now you're telling me he's good.
Oh, I think that's quite fair.
You guys are unbelievable, fair dinkum. You guys are unbelievable.
In what way?
Well, you're always criticising him. Now he has a good game, you're all on the bandwagon.
I don't think you can treat the whole media as one. I think most people agree that Mike Brown's a top Test player.
I think we can, and I'm sick of it, mate.
Well, you're on for 3 Six Nations in a row, and your record is pretty outstanding. So, from your point of view, you're 2 from 2.
You guys are better selectors than we are. Yeah, that's what you think you are. And now he plays a good game, you're all on the bandwagon.
Okay, but I think most people would agree that Mike Brown was excellent today, well, as were most of your players.
He's been excellent for 23 tests for us, so I don't know what was different today.
So Eddie, not afraid of sharing his opinion with the media about how he feels they've treated his player, but like, he's not afraid of sharing anything, really. All week was all about Eddie, wasn't it?
It's the Eddie show, isn't it?
The Eddie show.
And sure, you saw what he was like last week, putting it up to Alan Wynne and Rhys Patchell.
He just made stuff up about Alan Wynne Jones. Like, his description didn't happen.
He's,
but like, from the media point of view, they love this sort of, like, he looked like he's a Mourinho.
Are you saying that the media will write about stuff that they know that perhaps is a bit dodgy just to... Are you saying that?
I'm not saying anything.
Shocking allegation.
But he does give you the sound bites, doesn't he, in fairness to him, and he's a
quote generator.
Yeah, but in fairness, like, he's very cute in how he does it. He's like Mourinho. He kind of takes the pressure off his players. Like I mentioned it before, he takes that heat off, and it's about him, and no one talks about what the players are doing or who's not playing well or tactics. It's... Oh, what do you can't say that, you know, and everyone's analysing what he's talking about. They've gone back to look at video to see what Alan Wynne was doing, and everyone's gotten, you know, and everyone's talking about it, but yet he goes about his business and it's all about him. It's the Eddie show, and it's, yeah, I find it frustrating now personally that he does it the whole time. If he was doing it the odd time, fair enough, you'd take it, but now it's just like,
it's a bit of panto. So getting into more serious feedback from Schmidt, he did take the opportunity to talk about Jordan Armour and some of his learnings over the weekend.
I don't think it was targeted. I think it was just the fact that the ball went that way when it did. There was one clearing kick from Joey Carberry, which was superb. It was a very long kick, and fortunately bounced straight back into Minotti's hands. And I think I mentioned him during the week. He's got some serious footwork and acceleration, and yo, when I saw him matched up against Jordan, I thought that might be a pretty interesting match. And probably Jordan just got slightly awkwardly positioned, and that's a fantastic learning opportunity for him. He is such a good learner, such a positive character, that I think there can be a real positive coming out of what will have been frustrating for him.
Yeah, I like, there's a couple of words he uses about young players, and Larmour got a lot of them after the game. There was a, you know, it's a learning opportunity. He also used the term investment. Mm. You know, as if I read into that, that there is a cost with an investment, but you also hope to get a return. And this is where we had some bad things. Larmour would not have liked getting stepped on the outside. We were talking about that off air. But then he brought his own step right at the end of the game, which was, it was electric.
That's it, and that's what you can see that you can get with him, and it is, that's exactly right. It's an investment, and you can't go, you've got to be perfect out there. You're a young guy, it's your first international. I think it was actually teed up superbly well for him, that the game is won, go out there, like you're a talk before he goes out in the fields, an easy one. Go out and do what you've been doing for Leinster. Kind of go out and play with a smile on your face, enjoy yourself and have a go. And that's exactly what he wants. The last thing he wants to do is come on to an international tight game and you just kind of feel like, I don't want to make a mistake. And you don't want to think negatively. So I think there is a cost, and he will certainly not be happy with that. Maybe it's youthful enthusiasm or exuberance, whatever you want to call it, but he needs to slow down his feet. Okay, Minazzi, is that the name? Ridiculous feat as well. But again, on the flip side, you do see what he can bring. Like, as I said, the offer is he'll step you in the phone box, you know, off both feet, and the acceleration to get away, and it would have been unbelievable if he'd finished it. It was good defence, in fairness.
This brought back painful memories of Matawalu training for you, as we've talked about in the previous
show. My God. And I was like, painful memories? Who stepped me? Who didn't? Yeah. But yeah, look, he's a talent, isn't he? I think going forward, I think Ferg's going to come back in. It was great. He's got that exposure. He's got that, here's a little taster for you. You know what's expected of you now. Joe's kind of giving him a little bit of a bit to chew on there.
Homework.
Bit of homework, exactly. Yeah. Exactly the word. A bit of homework now. And, I think he's going to go, look, you did well, but you're still not the finished article. You know that. This has been shown. Go away, work on it. Okay, he's still going to be involved, of course, but Joe's going to bring back Ferg.
Yeah, so if you looked, that would make sense to get McFadden back in, should everyone else be fit in isolation. And then perhaps Scotland, you could easily see Larmour being dropped in again. I'd love to see Larmour and Hoggy in the same pitch with a chase. That'd be good.
It'd be interesting to see now, because Leinster, I'm sure, because they lost against Edinburgh, they'll be begging to get as many guys as they can back. So whether they're saying, listen, give us another week, we can, you know, give Larmour a game and get him out there again. But I'd be surprised to see him feature in that squad against Wales. But I wonder if Conway, I wonder if he's going to be fit if he gets a game for Munster as well. I know I was putting him into my team last week, even though he was injured. So
you had an aggressive timeline coming back from
definitely hopefully he's fit for Wales. So either of those would do the job, but yeah, I don't expect to see him, but we'll always have that step. That's unreal.
I hadn't thought about Conway actually for a bit, because kind of out of sight, out of mind, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see Joe's mindset in terms of what pecking order he has people in, because he goes to, when he falls back on things, he goes to his reliables. You're in the trenches, it's a big game against Wales, who do you trust? And you've got to go with the players that you trust, so hence I'm saying Ferg, you know, because Ferg's not going to let you down. He's going to work his socks off, he's going to do everything asked of him, he's solid as a rock, you know, and defensively and going forward as well, you know what you're getting. But he does it, and he's no mistakes, and that's what you need. And then you got Conway then, who's going to bring that little bit more, go in attack. You don't know what he's going to do, and it's going to be interesting to see how he, from my point of view, where he sees them and in their mindset as well, where they are, and Joe's going to have his pecking order, right, you're here, you thought you were here, and because Ferg's jumped up, I think, ahead of a couple of people, and surprised an awful lot.
We're spending time here talking a possible 23 shirt, but it is interesting those two players, what they've done this season. So Conway has always been, since he came out of school, an electric natural finisher, and he has added the Schmidt part of the game, the competing in the air, all the off the ball stuff, whereas McFadden has always had all of that stuff in his game, but this season compared to last, for example, has just looked a step quicker in attack. It's just really interesting to see they're now intersecting. I would agree. I think both of those, for any big game right now, they're both ahead of Larmour in a Schmidt team. But that's not what box office wants to see.
You know? No, certainly not. You pay your money, you want to see excitement and stuff. But it's the business of winning matches and winning games. And at the end of it, no one's going to care who is playing as long as we get the Grand Slam.
That's it. We're done with tries for the rest of the championship.
And we're talking Grand Slam, are we?
You have to.
Yeah.
Of course, absolutely. Why, like, it'd be... Okay, they're never going to mention it. It's going to come up now in the next few weeks, hopefully, if we get the results that the word's not mentioned. I'm sure that's going to be brought up soon enough. But you have to, of course. Like, even going into the game against France, you have to be positive and go, we should be there. We should be there, thereabouts. It should be down to, barring a lack of, I don't know, maybe one team having an off day. Okay, there can be tough games in terms of, okay, the Welsh got a win. That was good for us, I think. I didn't. What am I talking about? But like, I think it's Scotland.
It's the big bananas.
And it's Scotland. Yeah. Okay. So and then again, sorry, I meant Scotland got a win, and that was kind of, you know, that was good for us. I think if they lost, they're going to produce a performance.
Yeah.
Someone, even if you're losing 4-5, you're going to produce a performance in one of the games, and you're nearly not praying, but you're hoping it's not against us, you know, and we keep going along, and because every game is going to be a final. From like, it's cup rugby, it's win this and we lose that. Like it's triple crown from now on. It's Grand Slam. And I think we have to expect that. Okay. And we should go for why not?
Big targets.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So zipping through the other two games, England Wales. This was not the most exciting game of rugby there has ever been, but Wales were like missing a lot of players, and on another day this could have swung. It could have swung Wales' way.
Could have. Don't agree with your Wales were missing a lot of players because they were missing them the week before and they got the result. So,
okay.
I still think he's got a few lads to come back. It's interesting. Pity Lee Halfpenny went off at the start because from the turnover from the tries. I thought Owen Farrell played extremely well.
That kick for Johnny May was brilliant.
Yeah.
You don't see many kicks like that. It was, I mean, I know you have to have a player with the pace of May to get there, but to have the vision and execution was fantastic.
Yeah, I think he's playing extremely well.
Yeah.
And they have to fit him in the side somewhere.
He had a good turnover in Shingler as well. Shingler went one-on-one with him and he turned him over as well. But yeah, Farrell's absolutely brilliant, isn't he? Those two are actually working well, Ford and Farrell. Like,
I love it. It's fantastic. And I'm coming from a place where I wasn't the greatest fan of how Farrell played, but I think he's a lovely all-round player now. Few better in the world right now.
Yeah, of course. And I think that... if he was gone, you'd notice a huge change in how England play. You know, because he can jump in, the two first receivers can play on either side. He's an extra set of eyes that can look up and see what's in the backfield, helps out forward. He can control and boss the forwards as well. And to have that extra set, it's at that level, it just makes a difference, you know, that extra receiver.
Oh, they really do. So very quickly, the TMO decision that didn't go Wales's way. Views?
Try, 100%.
Try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
there are some people overthinking this.
but his hand touches it before Watson. Try.
If you show a specific part of the replay, you can say, "Oh, it's a knock on." Well, no, he gets down with pressure before the knock on. Don't overthink this. It's a try.
It's even kind of like there was a shock reaction in the crowd. The crowd were expecting it to be a try, and then it wasn't, and then it was just like a pause and then a celebration from the English fans.
They almost spilled their pims. Lobster rolls everywhere. We just referred to a Scotland's win over France. That was a very entertaining game.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
We deserved that as neutrals.
It looked like Teddy Tamar got off to a brilliant start from, didn't he? And created a couple of tries out of nothing, really.
That's making the try against Ireland look a little less bad from Ireland's point of view, isn't it?
Like that he has that one, the same as Larmour as well, this acceleration out of nowhere. I clicked my fingers there, it's terrible. And he's right beside a guy and then he just accelerates and he pumps off. And then even the other one where he chose not to pass to the lads inside him, they'd probably been killing him if that hadn't worked.
But he would have been murdered.
That would have been an absolute disaster. When he came, I was watching, I was like, pass inside there, you're under the sticks. And he chipped and I was like, oh, just it's... It's that other side, that selfishness, isn't it? That it's just like, it's me. It's all about me, you know? And, which is fine for a finisher from 5 yards out, but like, I thought Laidlaw butchered that one a bit. He should have even, like, don't take the chance. Put your boot to ball. But highly entertaining game. And again, I think the French should be disappointed. Ill-discipline again. Man, some of the penalties they're giving away are so silly. And you're pulling out your hair. Sorry, Pat. You'd be pulling your hair out like...
Well, it's a rough studio today.
Sorry. That was for Sam
it's
Simmons.
It's
so that's now put to bed, is it?
It is right, now. We can move on now.
It's going to mark something here.
But, the French coach must be going mad. Like, that's so frustrating, like, giving away these silly penalties. Like, I don't mind penalties in different areas of the park.
Okay, so what's... So, ex-pro's point of view, what's an acceptable penalty versus... What's a silly penalty?
Okay, for me, if someone makes a break and you're defending on your own line and you have a bit of a scramble in behind defensively, absolutely slow the ball down, stop them scoring a try. If that ends in a yellow, so be it. We go again. You know, concede the 3 rather than concede the 7 as such. But penalties off kickoffs, when you're putting the team under pressure, and like it frustrates me so much. You go up there and silly penalty, and they. Like when you're attacking, when you've got the ball in your own 22, you're a little bit nervous because you're like, okay, we don't want to make any errors here. We just need to get out of our half. And even if you kick and it's going to go out in the 10, say, or the 22, they're still in an attacking position. But to give away a penalty there, that's for the defense. It's like, oh my God, thank God, such relief. It's like, right, penalty, it's our line out as well. We're out of here. And then in front of the post, like kicking positions, when especially after 3 or 4 phases, when if you can defend for that long, then the attack standard will drop a little bit because you're going to have your strike plays that will set up play, like your Joe Schmidt plays that will, you know, you're looking for a specific area to target. And I think that after that, it's up to the individuals then to kind of see what's in front, and you have your wraparound plays as such. And to give away silly penalties after 5 and 6 phases and trust your defence.
When you said, right, the playbook's now gone.
Yeah.
They're doing something which is just in front of us. All we have to do is not mess up. And now the pressure is now on them.
Exactly. And you can bide your time. And like, I guess they did it for a bit against Ireland, but in the last set of phases. But then, like, because the back row, again, I thought they were good at the breakdown. They disrupted the Scots. Mm. But in front of the posts, just outside the 22, and when you've scored points as well, and to come back and concede, if they can get rid of that, like, they'll be a hell of a much better side. Like, and they can actually win these games, and that's going to be huge for their confidence.
Right. Coming up next, we have a chat with Donegal Ryan.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
We're happy to be joined on the line now by Donegal Ryan, who's taking a break from a busy morning training in Paris to talk with us. Donegal, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How is life in Paris? How's the French?
Just coming on slowly. Life in Paris has been good. It's very cold here at the moment. There's been a lot of snow, a lot of rain the last couple of weeks, so it's pretty cold here this morning. But it's been really, really enjoying us. The French is coming on very slowly. The last 2 months actually has been pretty good because playing a lot more games and the meetings are always in French, so you're kind of understanding a lot more. But I still have to improve my spoken French a bit. So it's a work in progress.
Would that fit into, you know, your strengths? Were you a person who was good at languages in school?
I wasn't too bad, but still, when you're it was easier when you're a lot younger learning languages, and now as you get a bit older now, and I suppose when you're trying to, you need to learn the language pretty quickly on a weekly basis. You're trying to pick up words and trying to be able to communicate more with the younger guys as well, who mightn't have any English, kind of a bit more frustrating. But it's very enjoyable. It gets me out of my comfort zone. I think everybody should probably do it, kind of to learn a new skill after as you go along in life. But it's getting there. But it would have been nice to have done it in secondary school. But sure, there you go.
Yeah, well, Jimmy already had a similar challenge when he moved to Cork to play for Munster. Did you have to learn the language, did you?
I got there eventually, yeah. I had to dumb down my English a little bit. sorry, Dennis.
Well, there's going to be trouble here, boy.
We can edit that bit.
The like Donegal, so you've flown back. You spent some time over in Ireland over the weekend. But is there a bit of a twinge watching the games? Because obviously the move to Paris meant that you were making a bigger decision than simply changing clubs, and you're not out there. Is there a twinge?
Yeah, so I think there'll always be a twinge. You'll always have to be playing out there. I laugh like my dad sometimes when he's watching the matches, power matches Limerick playing and stuff. He's still hopping over the seat, and Limerick playing tape runs like that. He still thinks he can do a job. He's always, his line is, I've never officially retired from hurling, and everybody believes they still can play and do a job. But okay, so at the end of the day, it's got to end probably in some time for guys, and I'll probably still have that twinge in 10, 15 years time, and the body's still in bits, but it's always there's always another guy coming around the corner, and it's important that they take up take a chance when they get it as well. So yeah, I'd always get massive enjoyment watching the games, but I suppose it never does compare to playing. But that happens to everybody in professional sport.
What did you think of the Conor Murray line-out?
The Conor Murray line-out? Yeah, I suggested something like that before years ago, and I got shut down purely because you want to have a more skillful player thrown in the air and maybe getting injured. I thought it was really clever because, you know, nobody marks that. He's an open option at the front, and he wrapped around, Kane Healy was on the time just to give him a front lift, but I'd say he's disappointed with his delivery. But it was very clever, especially the Munster did something similar against Leinster in Thorn Park. Very clever. It's refreshing to see that, because it's very hard nowadays to have anything original when it comes to stuff like that. Every team is doing so much analysis on each, all teams doing so much analysis, and they're kind of to the browser copying and things like that. So when you can have a number nine who's plus 6 foot, it's a massive advantage. I don't know if we'd have the same advantage if we were to do it with Maxi Machino. I don't think he's as tall as Murray, but it's very, very clever. I suppose Conor would have been disappointed with the delivery around the front.
Well, it's probably very complicated for a back getting involved in the line-out, Jimmy, is it?
I don't know. I've gone in once or twice.
Rugby in general is very complicated for backs. Is that right, Jimmy?
Oh, command owners. Yeah. That always astounds me how forwards actually, you know, they get the raw deal of being actually not the smartest lads. The piano pushes as opposed to the players, but the line is quite a complicated area, And like, I think I was in there once and they lifted me, and I think I flicked my back heels and hit my back lifter in the nuts, so that was the end of that. So it's like, back you go, right?
Yeah, it's good. Keep them well away, Donegal, I'd say. But you're dealing with, there must be, I know you said that French was the language of the dressing room and the meetings over there, but there must be a lot of calls to make sure that everyone understands in a multinational dressing room like you're in at the moment.
Yeah, it's very difficult because there's a couple, like the Samoan guys, Fijian guys, one of the Samoan guys has become struggles heavily with English, so it's kind of, you're trying to make sure everyone's on the same page, and I think that's the biggest challenge. One is the language, and two is the culture. Like, cause, you know, in Ireland, I suppose we've as players, they have a culture of, you know, not being blunt or anything like that, but a bit direct and trying to, you know, we all kind of want to do well and drive things on, and so you kind of cut to the, you're kind of a bit more short with the words, whereas that might, I don't think that goes down well with the French players, I suppose, even though you're obviously all want the same thing. It's nothing personal or anything like that, but it's very, very, I think it's very important that you don't really kind of rub anyone up the wrong way. And so, because at the end of the day, you have to work with all these guys as well. And so I think they really are, as players, they really kind of put the arm around them and and kind of basically more encouragement. They responded a lot very well to that, as opposed to kind of more direct chat, you know. But and that's what I noticed, and you probably noticed with Italy, you know, Conor O'Shea going in there with the different coaching staff, I suppose the bit of a language barrier as well can be a bit frustrating, I suppose, when you're trying to get your point across. So systems may not be as slick as you would like. But I know Jimmy probably tell you about that as well. He's an experienced founder as well, but it can be quite frustrating. I can see that things get decisions taken off a lot longer. They might, instead of taking, you know, an hour and a half, they do clock up to about 2 hours, because you're hearing the coaches were speaking French, and then you'd have to get one of the lads to translate it as well for other guys, especially on not every point is dragged out maybe by 5 minutes, and if you do maybe 4 huddles in a session, it turns into 20 minutes very quickly. So just basically talking. So sometimes that's kind of frustrating when you're trying to get momentum in a session, and obviously the coaches want to make sure that they're getting their point across the players, and sometimes it's very difficult for players to keep concentrated that amount of time. I know it sounds ridiculous, but if you're really trying to keep intensity in the session, and then you're being pulled in for a chat, and then it's translated, then momentum is lost in the session, and then guys are kind of, you know, they're not as focused as you would have liked. But yeah, it is a challenge, and it's very interesting. My appreciation for maybe foreign players having come into Munster over the years has gone up, you know, because it is a difficult transition, especially at the beginning.
There you go. That's nice words for people like you, Jimmy.
My transition. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree with Dunners. It's very frustrating when you want to say something, you can't say it, and like, you know, you want to have a conversation with someone, and someone like Dunners especially, like, who's not afraid to chat and has an opinion, you know, and like, but like, you know, they'll learn from that as well. But in fairness to Dunners now, like, he's immersed himself in that, and he's like doing the extra lessons, and you have to do that. Like, and even he mentioned Conor O'Shea there, he went over to Italy, and he's really hammered the Italian, and this is something that you need to buy into that culture. And I think the French people really appreciate that, and the Italians as well. But if you go over and you just say, right, the easy option is to speak English with the foreigners all day. It's easy, and you got to step outside the comfort zone.
But even the off the field stuff. So in the sessions, there's a bit of frustration. But okay, let's try and speak French. If you go to France, you cannot exist by speaking French all day. You'll have a very insular, lonely existence in France, because it's not like going to Denmark or Holland, for example, where they're perfectly happy to speak English. Yeah. France is different.
Yeah, exactly. And I think quite interestingly, in Italy, it was actually a lot of them were happy to practice their English on you, you know, and you're kind of like, okay, well, I kind of want to do Italian here. But yeah, it was, look, it's just one of those things. I think the French be more aware and kind of, you know, a foreign lad coming in, you have to go, right, make the effort. And yeah, otherwise, you don't want a drive in between the two cultures.
Donica, I was just wondering, how long did it take you then? James was saying you're a lad who doesn't mind sharing his opinion. How long did it take you to get comfortable over there and to actually give someone a bollocking in training?
I've kind of gone away from that. I've tried to go away from that the last number of years. And because I realise it's a really short-term solution for when you're dealing with lads, and it just obviously it's a very hard thing to do, I suppose, because sometimes you have to be the bad guy as well, especially when you're trying to organise things, and some lads might, you don't know what guys are experiencing outside of rugby as well. They could be daydreaming or thinking about something going on at home, whatever, you know. And I find that you really have to be a lot more patient as well, and a bit more kind of have a lot more retrospect what other lads are going through as well. You know, some guys could be worried about contracts as well. So, but it's important to, I really do think the arm around thing, the encouraging thing, is generally the way forward, because the roaring and shouting in France at lads, I think at a younger age, I see it because every Wednesday the schools get a half day, so they don't play a lot of sports in the schools over here, so the schools get a half day, and all the kids would play up in wrestling from under sixes, under eights, under tens, and so on. And it's actually interesting to see all the coaches and parents just literally having a right go at the kids. And at that age, you're just all trying to have fun, a bit of exercise and stuff. And it's I suppose that because the French players on the pitch are very quiet. Like, they're very quiet. There's very little communication. They were kind of saying that it's kind of from a culture from when they're younger that they guess, you know, they're probably so used to getting shouted at all the time that they're kind of just stay quiet and you don't want to disrupt any other player on the pitch or anything like that, which sounds completely bizarre, but you kind of, if that's what kind of does happen. And that's why it's kind of interesting with when the far players are there with the younger guys and they see them chatting on the pitch and just during the, as the play goes on, it is infectious. We can see a few of the younger guys at the moment, they're actually talking on more than they were at the start of the season, and which is good. Like, you know, it's not, you know, it's not heavy stuff they're saying, but it's just small words of encouragement just to know that they're still focused on the game, because French teams, if they get like two or three scores ahead of them, they kind of go very quiet and put the head down as well. And it's very important that, I suppose a lot of teams are, but if you have to kind of keep other players focused, like, you know, what are we doing next? You know, okay, we messed up there. What are we doing next? Fix next job and that kind of stuff. And it's kind of focus on that rather than focusing on a mistake that they've just done, because they're probably worried about getting a grill on, you know, Monday morning. So and that's not good for anybody, because the reality is, you know, just a time to play, you know, and kind of keep trying to get something out of the game, you know. But it's just, as I said, it's the culture thing as well. It's a totally different culture, which is actually just fascinating to see, you know.
I've got this image of Dunica hearing a 6-year-old getting a bollocking from a parent and taking some of the wrestling pack over to the pitch and sort of saying, lad, shut up. Quiet now. Leave him at it. What do you do away from the pitch to keep sane? Are you a rugby man through and through, or do you tap away at a few other things?
I probably thought I was a rugby man at all for years. I'm just a hurler doing a bit of rugby to me having a career break with the hurling. But I try to keep as busy as possible outside of it at the moment. I'm doing French classes on our day off, and we do two classes with the club a week, and my other class, I have a private class where I try to get to see Paris, and so we get to go to see cool places like Pompidou Centre or the Eiffel Tower. We just have classes up there, and up near Sacré-Cœur, so you get to see the whole of Paris and get a bit of history of the place, and rather than just going into a classroom again and putting the head down. So it's kind of makes I look forward to that. And I think for me, I would have been always kind of trying to keep busy outside of rugby. My biggest fear is, and I think a lot of players is what they're going to do next after rugby. It's you're kind of playing at the top level and you have a high level of focus, and then you go from that to starting all over again and you're kind of lost. So, and that's a huge fear I have. So it's when I got into rugby, this was the first goal I set down, was what's the exit strategy? Because, you know, there's like, you know, you generally finish on 33, 34, 35, and it's you know, obviously the whole career next ready to go is and that's a big challenge, trying to find the next best job, because, you know, like from our point of view as rugby players, you've got the greatest job in the world. You're getting to play a professional sport, and it can be a difficult time when you're finished. So I'm always trying to upskill. For instance, now I'm doing a bit of a mentorship or a workshop or an apprenticeship with Dilost. They're a buy-to-let lending bank inside Hume Street in Dublin, and it's been great. They've given me massive experience, massive knowledge, and it's been really enjoyable. So yeah, it's trying to keep as busy as possible outside of it, but it's I really enjoy it. Yeah.
In fairness, Dunners, you're always one of the players who was very proactive in that, and even a lot of stuff gets set up for the players, and there's a lot of evenings and introduction and networking evening, and in fairness, you're always at every single one of them. I do think it's a huge thing that players really need to focus on. I know I've kind of done similar. I've kind of been pretty organised, but you can never be too ready, because you never know what's around the corner. But just in terms, I remember you were, I don't know if you're still interested in it. Was it gemology or was it geology you were doing? They still involved in that?
Geology, was it? Geology, yeah.
I thought you were after the precious stones, though.
No. It was at the time, Jimmy's dead right, I think. And it looked with trying to find, just building context after rugby and stuff. It is very important, and I know the players are the last thing you want to do is after a game is trying to do a network, and it is difficult, especially after when you lose or when you're banged up. But it is a good opportunity to get to meet people, and kind of, I suppose, when you're at the toilet end of your career, you're kind of you're a bit more relaxed about those sort of things and realise there is a bigger picture. I find just. Everybody knows the type of job that we do. Everybody's watching on a weekly basis. I just find it interesting what other people are doing in their working life, and people are very open. They're just come on in for a day's experience if you like, and I try to take them up on that because it's just. I do find it very interesting, and as I said, just trying to find the next job is one thing, talking about a job, but when you actually get to sample this and you're in the environment and see how the cogs move on a daily basis, then you realise, geez, this is something I might like. And so the geology thing, it was Ray McMahon, a guy who worked with he's with Ilos now, but he was with Canaccord Genuity, a Canadian kind of trading platform, and they were in the bond desk and specialised in oil and gas, and he kind of maybe suggested I come in and have a look around and see what they do and kind of like what it is, and he said, look, it might be interesting for thing to do a geology course, and so I did that at night in UCC, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was very interesting, and I'd recommend a lot of people to give it a go, because you wouldn't look at the country the same again, but I'm not going to bore you with stuff like that, but it is very interesting, and as I said, look, it's every day is a school day, and you're always learning, so it's good to be able to do it.
Donica, did you ever get in at the end of that Munster game for that the cans of Dutch gold with the boys?
No, you kind of caught me in the hop, because I think Ricard isn't actually the best of drinks, but I probably should have got the Margois, which is Jackie Lorenzetti's famous wine, so I probably should have got it in with a bottle of that instead. But we went in. I got it. I think there's a few bottles of Heineken or something like that in the end. So a bit more upscale, I think. But it was good. It was good to catch up with the lads inside afterwards, because it's very hard, and you're trying to catch up with lads at the weekend. It's not even possible, because you're kind of on the go, and. Even after the game, the lads were having a meal, and they're rest coming home, and you're trying to do other things as well. So it's literally trying to juggle everything. But when you do get a chance after matches like that, it's great to catch up with the lads afterwards. Who knows? We might, the way things are going, I think we might end up seeing them again if we're able to do a job in Claremont, because I think Munster are in a really good position. They're playing against Toulon. I think they'll do a job in Toulon, and because they're looking really good at the moment.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for talking with us today, Dunica Ryan. And next up, we've the Twitter questions.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing really. Remember, Raj, Kev in the Killiney used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
You're welcome back to the Hard Yards. We're going to take a look at some of the questions you've sent in on social media. Remember to use the hashtag AskTHY if you get a question in for next week. First one, this is from Shane Madigan. Thoughts on John Ryan as the backup to Furlong? He was one of Munster's top players last year and now can start for Munster and looks to have gone behind Porter on the bench for Ireland. So this is, who is starting ahead of Tadhg Furlong if, well, that's how I'm reading the question, if he can't go for Wales?
After France I would have said Ryan, but now I'm saying Porter because he just put in such a good performance
from the start.
I'll go for that as well. If Furlong's gone, I'll stick with it.
I'd go opposite actually. I think John Ryan, it's our conversation earlier on that you have, like, in the big games who starts. I think against Italy you can get, okay, I think Porter did a great job because he played, what, 77 minutes. Okay.
Which, by the way, in prop terms, is long. Mm.
You expect 55, and then your finishers, as Joe calls them, comes on. So, John Ryan, he would trust in the French game, so I think he's going to go John Ryan. But not bad to have these problems. It's like, what you want is the type of situation you have with Keane Healy and Jack McGrath.
Yep.
You want that quality where we can swan in and swan out, change it according to who you're playing, and just have them both chomping at the bit, really trying to get out there and put their hand up. And that's, competition is great. So how bad a problem is it that we've three tight heads?
That's because he had a great game against Zebra. I know, again, we're talking Italy, Zebra, it was only Zebra, but it was interesting to see that Schmidt then dropped him back to get a run out for Munster as well. So he could have him in mind, for the Welsh game. So good problem to have.
Okay, next question from Patrick Logan. How concerned should we be by Carberry's lack of time at 10? Is Keatley a better bet at the moment? So he had 20 minutes, I think, in the Montpellier game, didn't play in Paris, and then he got a bit of time against Italy at the weekend. That's not a lot of pitch time.
No, like I was getting myself into a tizzy about it before the Six Nations, and then I was just saying to myself there ahead of the last game, I was like, listen, we've 18 months to go to the World Cup here. That's where the long term plan is. Stick with Sexton for now. Give your man Carberry a game every now and then. Maybe give him a go during the summer tour as well. So, just still keep letting him learn. Like, the whole thing is, like, if we throw him in, he makes a mistake, he'll get hammered for it as well. Like, some, you see, like, Stockdale got hammered, Larmour's getting hammered for making defensive mistakes. So just let him keep, you know, learning from Sexton and training with the lads. And
Is this one of these situations where, say, Jonathan Sexton rips a hamstring in training, he's out for the next two games? Would you parachute Keatley into start and still have Carberry on the bench, or do you put all the chips with Carberry?
I'd go with Keats because play safer. But I think his game management out there is crucial at international level. He's improved. We've spoken about Ian before and what he's brought this year and how much of that leadership mantle he's taken on. And he's playing every week. So he knows what to bring, and I think he can bring on Carberry to add impact at a certain stage. But okay. I think, I would do that. But I think that exactly what Pat said. I think in the summer, rest Johnny, you rest up, have a break, bring your man down to us. I'm sure he'll bring him to Australia, but
everybody will be fighting to go to Australia, won't they? Especially with the World Cup.
This will be a big one. Not many games left before that World Cup. So on a similar vein, we've now, Sexton is now uninjured. So we're redoing the hamstring. This is from Martha Cooney. Would Schmidt ever consider playing two tens with Sexton and Carberry? So as we were talking about, with the English have done very successfully now with the two, would we do that in Ireland?
Well, Scannell's a 10, 10-12. Has played 10 most of his career before switching to centre. So, yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility. Because he is quite physical as well, and you know, you're not going to lose anything that way. If you do, it's going to be interesting how to use, if they play Chris Farrell at 13 then, if you're going to have a second distributor, I don't know if you'd use Bundy that way. To start, if you're looking, if you're going down that alley of looking to start Johnny and Joey together, that's, for me, that's a non-runner to start. Why? Just physicality. If I saw Joey Carberry playing against me or against him, I'd attack him all day. Just keep, like, there's only so long you can.
And at this stage, we're not moving Sexton to 12.
No, I wouldn't.
This conversation changes slightly if you don't have Rob Kearney at fullback and you had Simon Zebo, because you've already got a second playmaker in the team.
Yeah, okay.
No, it doesn't.
You're talking about broken field runners and broken field play. So again, like, it depends what you want. How much do you, like, do you want Zebo coming in as a, okay, you do want him coming in as the first receiver, but do you not want him out wide to be that strike runner out wide and bring that pace? Like, so are you limiting him by doing that? We're talking about a player who's not involved, but yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. But you can't, but if you're going to have Carberry and Johnny in, they're going to be their first receivers. You're not going to see them out in the edge finishing because they're creating on the inside. So it's one or the other as such. I do think that there is a time and a place for that. If we're chasing a game, if you need a bonus point, we're comfortable, we need something to happen, you need a key to unlock, and these are the lads that can do it. You need, and I think we missed that against France. You know, we lacked it. Like, that's, for me, that was a game where, right, it's Rob off, Joey on, make something happen.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Okay, good. Last one. This is from Johnny Elliott. Should Henshaw have taken the tackle and avoided injury given the scoreline at the time? I did see something in a piece written about this the weekend, you know, about relaxing, going over the try line or whatever, and I don't buy it. Personally, I think players, they want to score. It was an unfortunate injury, but no one could have predicted that outcome.
Yeah, like, he landed on the ball, didn't he, and then took the tackle at the same time. And
the way is, there was, the player hit him as he was going over the line. There's a lot of momentum going through one joint. A bit of a freak.
Very similar to Alan Quinlan. Do you remember he missed the World Cup or the Lions that he missed when he was Argentina when he dislocated? Was that World Cup?
Yeah,
dislocated his shoulder scoring a try. Yeah,
he missed the Lions for a different reason.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Moving on. I just, no, the defender's come back, he's chased back, he's got him just before the line. It's a freak accident. It's
one of
those things.
Does it remind me of the Tommy O'Donnell one? Do you remember Tommy O'Donnell was in Cardiff in the warm-up game, and he popped the hip, and again, just odd bit of momentum going through one place, you know?
Yeah, like, it's just bad luck, you know? Yeah. It's one of those situations where he's just landed awkwardly. It can happen, you know, so many times, and so it's unfortunate. There's no malice. It's not as if he scored the try and someone slid in late or jumped on him late. That's
exactly
ridiculous.
And that's the
absolutely
one. That's the one you don't like to see.
No,
where there's no chance of getting the ball is already down, and then there's a knee goes into the ribs.
Yeah.
That wouldn't.
And I think that you see that guy, like, you don't want that Italian guy. Not okay. Robbie wants him to give up the chase, but then we look at Keith Earls running back, and like, what do we want there? Like, you
exactly
know, if he lands on him and injures him, what a tackle! And it was amazing to see in the 79th minute that he's still able to do that.
Oh,
you know?
Busting a gut. And also great.
Yeah, like, the game.
Earls is, you know, it's tempting to think of Earls as still being the eternal kid, you know, but he's not. Like, he's getting up there, but still, the man has pace.
Mm. Yeah, that was the best moment of the game, because you could see it from a distance that he was catching him as well. Yeah. So it was a big, and then he got him. So it was like, it was great to see.
Yeah. So we talked earlier on about players who might be released to get some game time this weekend. So the Pro 14 schedule is going on at the moment. Edinburgh nipped a win over Leinster.
Big win for them, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good win. That was a good result for Scarlets until they lost in Treviso.
Yeah, it was amazing too, yeah.
Yeah, so well done Tyburn for getting a try, but not a great result. But that does mean the situation right now is on Conference A, Glasgow are top with 60, Munster are second and 48, Cheetahs third and 41, Connacht are down in fifth right now. Conference B, Leinster have now overtaken Scarlets in points difference. They're tied at 53, Ulster 45, Edinburgh 42. So that means we've two big games this week. weekend in that regard. You've got Ulster play at home to Edinburgh. And oh, Ulster had a big win against the Kings. Joy Neville refereeing.
Yeah, it was great stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. So they were 59-10.
Gilroy with another reminder. Another reminder to Joe Schmidt that he can still score tries.
I'm not sure these reminders work.
No.
But yeah, they'll be looking to do good things to Edinburgh, because that could actually give them a little bit of comfort.
Yeah. They'll be boosted by that. Like, you know, when you wallop a team like the year, you go in with a bit of confidence, and if you can get another win over Edinburgh, which I'd back them to do, then all of a sudden things are starting to look up for them. And, well, in terms of the Pro 14, anyway.
And then Leinster play Scarlets. So this is the great who will be released game, because both clubs have huge numbers of players in the international camp. So this is going to be a potentially crucial game, saying who gets top seeds.
It'd be interesting. Yeah, Joe says you can have Joey Carberry back, but he's the number 10 jersey for him.
There'll be a lot of negotiation on game time. I'm not going to read into too much who they release as of yet, because people are just going to want game time. I'm not going to say, oh, they've released him, so he's not going to play. They'll want people to have games.
Yeah.
If you're certainly involved in the squad, you'll be released to play. Like, if you're in the external squad, if you're in the match 23, he might release some of the bench. Yeah. Okay, no, starting 15 out.
I think he said he's keeping 20 in
20 to 22. Yeah, yeah. He said, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, okay. Well, that's fine. Well, he's obviously going to hold back some. It'd be interesting actually with some of the props if he's going to hold some back. Don't want to risk injury. You've got to play. You've got to be smart now. And this is the great thing about the Irish system, that they can control who's going forward and back. And this is where we can look after players and wrap them up and keep them off the field.
Yes, we'll see what happens with that one. Very quickly to the rest, Connacht play Zebre, Cardiff play Munster, Glasgow against Cheetahs. I would pay money to go to that game. Ospreys against Kings, and Dragons against Treviso. Yeah, I think that's it. Thanks to Pat, James and Donica, to Alan Lachnan for producing, and Shane Dempsey was on sound. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for episode 50 and for listening to all of them, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.